Hey, Chef. Welcome back to the show. In an industry that glorifies the sprint, Chef Franck Dablachon is a master of the marathon. From Michelin-starred restaurants to high-volume hotels, Chef Franck has built a global career anchored not in ego or flash, but in discipline, craft, and the long game of leadership. In this episode of Chef Life Radio, I sit down with a man who's seen it all and still shows up curious. We talk about what it means to move from doing to leading, how to shift from chef to mentor, and why sometimes the hardest and most important thing to do is to say nothing at all. Chef Franck opens up about the early days in France, the humbling lessons of managing people across cultures and continents, and the quiet satisfaction of seeing his team thrive without needing to be the center of attention. If you've ever wondered what sustained excellence looks like in the real world, not the TV version, this conversation will feel like a masterclass. In this episode, it isn't about chasing titles. It's about showing up with consistency, letting go of the need to prove yourself, and choosing to lead from a deeper place of purpose. So grab your apron, pour a coffee, or whatever you'd like in your cup, and meet me on the back dock where all the best meetings are held, right after these messages. Welcome to Chef Life Radio, the podcast dedicated to helping chefs and culinary leaders take control of their kitchens, build resilient teams, and create a thriving career in hospitality. I'm Chef Adam Lamb, your host, leadership coach, and industry veteran. If you're tired of high turnover, burnout, and the daily grind, you're not alone. This podcast is here to give you the real strategies, insights, and tools you need to lead with confidence, build a culture of excellence, and craft a kitchen that works for you, not against you. Because the best kitchens don't just survive, they thrive. Hit that subscribe button and let's get started. Chef, real quick, if you've ever wished there was a place where chefs could just show up and talk about real stuff like leadership, mental health, emotional intelligence, sustainable hustle, without all the ego and bullshit, then you might be ready for the Chef Life Brigade. We're building a private community for chefs who give a damn, who can show up without their clogs or their aprons for live calls, exclusive content, and real conversations. No posturing, no grind set nonsense, just presence, growth, and accountability. The waitlist is open now. Get on it at thechefliferbrigade.com/join or hit the link in the show notes. You don't have to lead alone anymore. Let's build kitchens that actually work. Now, back to the show. I want to welcome to the show Chef Franck Dablachon. Chef, why is now the right time for you to write a book about leadership in the culinary community?
Okay. So I think I've always been somewhat of service of my team for many, many years. And I guess I felt ready to say something, and I felt ready as I was kind of pivoting into the world of entrepreneurship, and I would not necessarily be in the kitchen as much as I have been. I just found this avenue to put my philosophy and what has, I believe, resonated with many people's hands that I know I would not be able to touch without writing a book. It's kind of the perfect storm for me to feel like it was just the right time, the right place. I had the right message, and it was validated by many that I have trained over the years. I just felt, why not? I have the knowledge, the expertise, and the authority. Therefore, maybe it can help someone in need.
And man, there's a lot there. How were you validated by others?
I think I've taken in many forms. Some of them, and probably the most gratifying one, is when I was starting new jobs. Doing your career, you build your team, and then at some point, you the chef to say, okay, I'm moving on to the next opportunity. And then obviously you're witnessing a lot of sadness and kind of, well, what about us kind of thing. And then when you get to that new place and you realize that you need help, you cannot do it on your own, you find yourself giving some calls and say, hey, I might have an opportunity here. And the speed and the level of commitment and engagement they have towards, yeah, sure, let me come and work for you again. I loved it. It's almost like they're continuing their journey and you're lucky to be part of. Right. So I think that's probably the most gratifying part, is realizing that your way of working, the way you show up to work, and the way you articulate and you care for them and their own journey, I think that the way it transpired for me is really having a quote-unquote following over the years, a lot of loyalty from the people under you. So that would be the main one for me.
It's kind of interesting because typically chefs get hired because of the following they have with the general public, right? That they're hot shit. They know they can fill a room. Yet I think both you and I know that the real measure is like, can I fill a kitchen?
you won't get that general public unless you have a team. I don't know any chef, successful chef at least, that have been able to succeed in their career to get that level of recognition without having the team that was pushing back, that was pushing in the back.
At what point in your career did you recognize that things had to be done differently? You said that you had been team-oriented for a long time, and I know a lot of chefs who say that. And then you talk to some of their associates and they'll tell you something different. Mm-hmm. But I get that you were pretty grounded in that as a way of being, such that you could speak with authority on matters like this. So just curious, like, did you always looking at that as like, that's my edge, that's my learning curve right there?
I would say yes and no. I mean, I did not start always being team oriented. I came from being an overachiever in my approach to things. When I was the cook, I was just doing great. I was respected teamwork and I respected the team, but I was also very selfish in my own growth. I'm going to do this because I want to do this. And I moved that. And when I kind of pivoted and became my own leader and my own manager, I realized that I did not necessarily have any social skills. I was just someone that knew how to work. I knew how to work. I knew how to cook badass food, but that was it. That was it. And so as you become your manager and suddenly your chef says, okay, Frank, you're going to be in charge of a Saturday night service. And then you haven't really built a rapport with the team. Half of the team think you're cocky and arrogant. So all those things, you realize when you're trying to command that kitchen, then you don't really get that response. So you realize very quickly that you have two options. You either continue that route and just say piss off to everybody, or you just decide to change and pivot and say, okay, well, maybe I need to actually pay attention to who works for me and realize that last night it went bad for service. It was chaotic for 3 hours. You can blame everything, but at the end of the day, you were in charge and you failed to deliver. So you realize how those rapport and caring about the cooks, even the dishwasher, caring about the dishwasher will allow you to actually succeed in some of the hardest nights. I think it was more of a progressive approach to it, but I never started that way. I felt I was just conditioned to just excel, seeking out perfection, because that's the world that I was coming from. And then I was demanding the same thing, regardless of anyone having the same mindset as mine. I was almost just saying, oh, you don't want to do it, then just leave. I was just not pleasant, and I was not someone you would want to work for back then. So I had to learn that.
I'm curious to know, and I don't want this to sound insensitive, but where did you grow up and where did you train? And I'm curious, upon reflection, where did that sense of personal excellence and holding everyone else to that, whether or not they're able to achieve it? I've had experiences with chefs from all over the world, and there are some who are absolutely 100% rigorous and will never, ever let anybody get away with shit. And there are other places where it's a little bit more laissez-faire. But I'm just curious about your upbringing and what coming up in that culinary culture taught you that this was absolutely sacrosanct. You don't veer from this.
Yeah, of course. I grew up in France. That's kind of where my journey started. And I skipped high school, went directly into apprenticeship and working in the kitchen. And so 15 years old, you know, you're still kind of trying to find yourself.
Right.
But at the time, it is something that is completely reachable and approachable in France. Therefore, this is a normal avenue that you can take on and move on in life. So you don't necessarily realize what you wish you had learned between your 15th and 20th birthday. But here I am. I was in the kitchen learning to live life already out of the educational system. I've entered Michelin star rated restaurant. We were seeking out the first Michelin star. And then after that, I fell in love with this entire Michelin star world. Therefore, that's all I was doing. And when you enter those kitchen, you work for chefs that this is all they're looking for. If you're not here to reach the Michelin star, then you need to find another kitchen. And it is telling you this in your face unapologetically. It's just you're here for the wrong reason. If you're here for a paycheck, then leave. If you're here just to be lazy, then leave. If you're here for this, then leave. You're finding out almost every week they give you a reason to leave and you just stay.
Right. They're waiting for you to get through all the reasons and just still be standing there.
Yeah. Until you realize that you actually part of something bigger than yourself. And then you realize that, okay, well, everyone here, there's a team of seven and the seven people are here for that same reason. Therefore, you also, obviously, we gain and we got the first Michelin star, which now is giving you a stamp of validation success. You just achieve it. Mm. And this is what I had to do in order to achieve it. Therefore, anytime now that I'm getting into an idea of what success I need to reach, this is the method that I'm going to approach. And you just kind of replicate what you've learned at work, and you don't realize that sometimes the environment is rejecting because that is not their idea of success. And then you just kind of having to work on yourself, or you stay an asshole for a long time, and then you realize that you by yourself doing things. And I meet people to this day. I don't understand why I'm not being hired. I've been applying for jobs for like 6 months. It's maybe because you're not good, or maybe because you are looking for something that it's out of actually what you can achieve. I promise you, people that are doing the right thing and people that are good will find a job. And you get to a level at some point that you don't even apply. Your name is being part of conversation when you're not even part of. Yeah. So that's how you want to navigate the journey.
Yeah, like developing a personal brand based upon your willingness to do the work.
Yeah. Right? One of my chefs used to tell me, I say, Frank, you are your own PR.
Which is true.
It is true, but yeah. Man, I wish I knew that a year before she told me that. because at the end of the day, it's very true. When you're making bad choices and you've made wrong calls, it is as damaging because it is PR. And so you are only representing you for you, and all decision in front of you will have consequences. Now it's up to you to have good ones or bad ones based on your calls.
And once trust is broken with some folks.
Yeah, that's hard.
There's no getting that back. Mm-hmm. For some, you know, and I think you've been thinking about this a lot, about consequences based upon ways you're showing up. And I recognize that you and I share a lot more than our conversation the other day, because I got fired from a job because I was defending one of my cooks to a couple of waiters who were treating her poorly. And, you know, at the end of the shift, they pulled me upstairs and they said, well, you know, you're being a disruption, so we're going to have to cut you loose. Because I kept living in the future of the idea of the restaurant, like what it could be. And I became very frustrated that others didn't see that. Mm. I did not yet know that particular storytelling skill and how you enroll a group of people into a possibility that doesn't exist yet by mm-hmm. coaching and constant, not just telling a story at the beginning of the year and hoping it comes true, but every day kind of sowing that seed. When did your idea of what it meant to be a success in the culinary industry start to change?
I think I'm someone that appreciate public recognition. That's kind of almost my appreciation language.
Words of affirmation.
Yes, word of affirmation, public acknowledgement. I'm very good to give credit where credit is due for the team. I will be thankful and grateful of them, but I do like good public acknowledgement of a culinary department did a great job, or we got a magazine piece about chef. Like, I do enjoy that. It gives me a little tap in the back, and I feel great about those. So I think as I've pivoted over time to stay away from the external accolades of the actual property and realizing that I was gaining a lot more joy and internal fulfillment when a cook told me, chef, I've got another opportunity to work in another job. I said, but I kind of want to stick around here. I said, well, what was the opportunity? And so he said, well, this is this. I can work in this restaurant and they will pay me more. And I said, okay, well, that's a no-brainer. Go for it. I said, no, but I want to stick around here. And it's just like those little things, those little nuggets that happens along the way just validates you that you are actually on the right journey and the right track in order. And that's just what you kind of attribute to success. You just find yourself that making an impact in someone's life to a point that they're at crossroads, they have a decision to make and they choose to stick with what they like versus what's attractive, which is more money, which is the title. I guess I just translate that in my experience. I just translate that as success.
Yeah, I would certainly agree. And the other thing that's jumping out at me is, they thought it was more valuable to stick with you for something that is building than turn around and for another $2 get a job in which, you know, it's like the idea that you could actually dedicate yourself beyond this next 30 minutes to something achievable as a team. Like, no, I'm going to delay my gratification because I think there's something sweet here and I want to be part of it. Because if I leave, then I'm going to miss it. Like, I'm going to miss the opportunity to actually witness it or be like part of the team.
But I think there's also a key component. Not only they have to feel like they are growing on their own journey, but they also have, we cannot dismiss the fact that we also want to, as a common team, the whole team, we want to move forward in a direction and you want to make them feel like I cannot achieve it without you being part of this team. So there's really the two part of this is you're part of something bigger than yourself, but there's also the time allocated in order to just say, okay, this is just a one-on-one. This is you and I sitting. What is it that you need for your own growth? What is it that you want to learn? What is it that I can help you with? And so when you're providing this and you kind of hard to want to go, it's hard to think the grass is greener on the other side since you don't necessarily face any really challenge or anything that you don't feel supported or you have someone behind you that can help you if you fall back. Mm-hmm. All those things are important to remember.
So it sounds like maybe at the beginning, unconsciously, you were doing this, but you pretty quickly came to the idea that it's important that not necessarily there's a safety net, but that people feel like you have their best interest in.
There is that. And I like to think you being attracted with something and there's also something that's pushed you back and kind of making you. And I think the opposite of that in a good way, the opposite of that would be that it's tiring to work by yourself and you have a low team. Mm. And so best way to do that is to make sure that you're working on your retention. Mm. In order to work on your retention, you need to understand why there is a retention problem. So by taking care of people, the way they want to be taken care of, by paying attention to what they're saying, by giving them the tools to do their job and go fight to do their job, you realize that they're actually going to stick with you. And then you find yourself like 9 months later, you get into a call with your corporate team and they say, okay, we're going to discuss if we can send, do you guys need any help entering the season? And then you got everyone say, yeah, I'm missing 5 cooks. Another one say, I'm missing 3 cooks. Another one, I'm missing 7. And I say, Frank, do you need a CS? I'm missing 1, but I think I have a plan. And so you realize by comparing yourself with others that just validate that, I actually don't have an issue with looking for staff. And so this external conversation makes you realize and say, okay, I think taking care of people seems to be a way to go. Mm-hmm. And so you just learning those things as you go. So it's an evolution as you're going. You know, you go from a sous chef to become a chef de cuisine and you realize that now this is not just about the cooks. You also have to build the right team from having you on sous chef that believe what you believe. Mm-hmm. That it meant what you implement. So now you have a little bit more freedom to continue to move forward in the bigger picture because you know you can sit on your couch at home on a Saturday night. You talk, the team is doing the right thing at work. So all of this takes a lot of time to put in place.
And thank you for saying that because I think certainly at one point in my career, and I think others believe that it's a quick fix. And I'm not talking about chefs. So as an example, going through COVID, there was a lot of conversation about mental wellness and programs that they should have been putting in place. And so there was a big rush to try to get programs together so people could feel supported in their work and by human resources and other folks. And several years went by and they decided to actually go back and do a review of these programs. And they found that the overwhelming attendance record of these programs was abysmal. Because it doesn't matter how many, you know, free sessions you get at a therapist if the job still fucking sucks at the ground level. So it's kind of like thinking that this is actually what's going to do it. And I love that when you talked about having small conversations, right? Because really that's what meant the most to me. And I'm curious, like in your becoming, did you reflect a lot on the things that you wanted? It seems to be pretty easy to figure out what others want because that's what, you know what I mean? Like, what were the things that I was missing as I was coming up?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I don't think I ever really looked at me as making an assessment of what I wish I had received. I've always been grateful of the lesson that I received flat on. And also, I've always find a level of appreciation into not receiving those lessons. So I knew what not to do. And so I'm someone that is very observer. I pay attention a lot. When I was growing up in the culinary, I was not talking much. I was usually kind of doing my thing. I'm very focused, very disciplined, but I pay attention. And so when I see, for example, you working, you're doing your thing, but then you see the chefs coming hard on one of your coworker, and then that coworker literally now is shaking and the whole service is just making mistake after mistake. A chef is on him. And then you just realize, I say, man, you can either look at it and say, man, these guys suck. Or you can just say, Well, I understand why he's actually struggling. The guy just got frazzled before the service even opened the door. And the chef didn't stop doing this. So you kind of observing both ways, and then you go to that cook and then you just say, hey, how are you doing, man? And he said, man, this is a shitty service. Mm-hmm. And I just say, man, I'm sorry that he got to you before service. And he say, how are you looking for tomorrow? Is there anything? I've got about 40 minutes tomorrow with my prep that I can help you out. So how do you do that? And you start doing all those little things, and you establish yourself as a leader long before you have a title.
Without a doubt. I celebrate that comment wholeheartedly, sir. And it sounds like that you're more about paying forward the things that you were given.
Yes.
And also flipping the perspective to realize that the things that you didn't get were also a gift.
Yes. And I have acknowledgement at the end of my book about all the naysayers and the people that were actually in obstacles to my journey. I acknowledge, because if they didn't exist, I probably would not have taken that other routes in right. order to get that experience, which I'm grateful for. So I seeing it as a gift is a big word for me. I just see this as just that you only have one journey and you got to take it and make the most of it. And sometimes, like I said, by paying attention to the details, you can definitely extract a lesson from pretty much anything.
Yeah, it struck me that in telling the story about the chef who was riding the cook, when I was like seeing that in my mind, I thought that was pretty calculated bullshit, because that chef was going to run him out the fucking door. You know, mm-hmm. there was no place for that person to hide, and he was going to make sure that, come on, coming onto him right before service and then rang it in, like, that's... But I guess that's a management style, but I'm not quite sure what
it's finding that perfect balance, because I witnessed this. I went to help that cook the next day, and then we became friends. 4 years later, I'm finding myself doing the same thing to a cook. And it's like, you know what I mean? Like my the pressure of what you're doing was that I was just not in control of my emotion. And then here I am, I'm going after this cook because it was not really on prep. And then I'm going after him. I decided to make him my target for the whole thing. You're just going after him. And then he messed up the entire service. And then you go and sit down in the office and you just say, what an asshole. It's like, man, you just witnessed this 4 years ago, and here you are doing the exact same thing. What the hell is wrong with you? And so all those things kind of, at that point, you realize and say, there's a kind of something that click in your brain, in your head, and you're just like, okay, I'm never going to do that again. Because you know now, you felt it, you witnessed it, and you've actually provided it, realize that is not the person you want to be. So you just decide to kind of going the other route and the complete opposite.
I think that's why earlier in my career, I really gravitated towards hotels and resorts, because there were other culinarians there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could be the biggest fish in a small pond and be a 90-seat bistro and you're the king. But not only do you not have, like, how can I say it? We challenge one another because we know it's good for one another, right? We can do it lovingly and we can do it shitty, but we know that, you know, only a spear sharpens another spear. And that's why there are competitions and, you know, pit one. And I think that that's incredibly useful skill set. And if you're by yourself in a restaurant, it becomes very easy to become complacent or forget what you're doing. Whereas, you know, chefs on that team in the management, you can be looking around, and I don't want to say comparing yourself, but certainly I learned a lot by, to your point, kind of like looking over there and like, this guy's got it. I want to be more like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also recognized in myself that there was an emotion in me when you were talking about showing up in that space, like my fear that I didn't have what it takes to be the chef, that nobody would follow me, that if I was an asshole, like all those conversations that are going on in my head as a young man, that's the trouble. Like, wisdom comes through the journey, and it takes having some skin in the game and getting it nicked every once in a while. And I've fallen on my face. I had that same experience where I had a dishwasher fall to my office screaming, wow. Crying. Like, it shocked me. It's like, holy fuck, man, I can't do that. I can't take away another man's dignity. What am I thinking? You know, I start to believe my own press releases, I guess. And I'm really interested in like how this huge volume of experience and knowledge has formed your philosophy about leadership and about how what you do fosters more of it.
I'm not sure I understand the question, and do you mind kind of reforming it from another angle?
Yeah, you mentioned earlier in the show that, you know, you've developed a philosophy. And I'm just curious, You know, there's no, the philosophy is complete with all the great things and all the bad things that happen to you.
Yes.
Right. And it's developed through wisdom and experience. And so can you tell me, like, in a few words, to let everybody know, like, what is your philosophy about leadership in the culinary industry? And what are you doing to help others gain it?
Yeah, of course. I don't think that I have the original unique secret sauce to leadership.
None of us do.
I don't claim to have it. I just realize I just want to be able to approach things with a craftsmanship in mind. Like, we're here to create something. We have the actual, the beautiful job to be a chef, to be able to create arts, but at the same time, it's actually tasty, it's delicious, it's beautiful. You kind of almost stimulate all the senses with just your ability to do something.
It's not only yours, but the people who are having it.
Of course. When you get that to a person that's coming to enjoy this meal and then they're sending those reviews and all of those things, you realize the amount of power that you have in your hand. If you were to quantify this, it's a lot of power that you get to make or break someone's anniversary or make or break someone's vacation.
Or responsibility, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
I believe you have a duty as you climbing up the rank as a chef. You have a duty, I would say it's almost like a moral duty and a responsibility for the next chef to be able to replicate what you're doing. And so you kind of trying to approach it from that angle is like, we are privileged to be giving this opportunity to do this. I think there's a whole lot of passion that comes with it. When you're passionate about cooking, creating a new menu, I was someone that probably still to this day, I'm a huge paradox of patience and impatience. And
explain why.
When it comes to menu, we know how much work into a menu creation. Mm-hmm. You're starting to brainstorm with your team, you're putting on paper, then after you refine the words, then after you're buying the ingredients, then you do your tasting internal, and then after you do your tasting for whoever, right. Then you launch your menu. Usually by the time I'm launching the menu, I'm tired of this menu. I want to change it. It's almost like I'm ready to change the menu. I'm over it. Let's move on to something else. There's just so much creativity that can come out of it that I wish I could do a menu with 80 items on it because we could execute. But the reality is you can't. Not realistic to do that. So to answer a bit of your question is a passion for the craft, an understanding of the responsibility and the moral duty that you have towards the actual craft. And then the people that are trying to they're learning their own journey to do that. I realized very quickly that everyone has a good reason to be in this. I had people that they went to culinary school. They were passionate about it and they took that route. I have some people that say, dude, I just came out of prison for 2 years, but I love cooking. Right. And now this is my journey and I want to do that. So everyone has their own journey and it is up to you to get to know their journey, where they're headed. And I think my philosophy is this, is get to know the people that works with you, trying to find out the real reason why they're here. And if you can help them on their journey, and maybe out of a journey of 30 years in their career, you've been part of two years of those, but you've made an impact long enough that they want to persevere in that route, then it's a huge win. I'm still having people that I work with 10 years ago that's still calling me and then just say, hey, I just got my first exec chef position. And you just say, man, I'm like so proud. And it's just like, I'm having goosebumps just talking about it. It's just so much more fulfilling.
It's an amazing experience. It really
is. So much more fulfilling than I just put a great monkfish dish for the guests on the menu Saturday night. Like at the time, that's what you actually see as success is you make a great menu and people are raving about it.
Right.
And it transforms over time with obviously you don't diminish and dismiss that part, but you realize there's something so much bigger than that, which is really growing your team to become a better version than you by the time they are their own exec chef. And for me, that has been somewhat fulfilling to me, is really kind of taking the time to provide. And that became my new craft, is just to help mentoring and coaching these cooks.
Wait, man, I just need to take a second because people used to laugh at me when I would tell them, no, a chef's job is to make himself obsolete so that the restaurant runs seamlessly when he's there. And when he's not there, because everybody's gaining the skills. And you and I touched on this when we spoke briefly before about this idea of the craft and the business and how sometimes they can be at odds. And I think, speaking for myself, that I was delusional for most of my career because I thought that once I got done with this shitty job, I could then find a job that I could actually live my craft. And it took me a while for me to understand that building a great system is craft. Being a great coach and mentor to a staff that not only do you not have a retention problem, but you've got a problem because they keep bringing you people, right? And you're trying to find spaces for them. And I would look at that and go like, I'll find a space for them. They want to work? Cool. Because we always need more in our community. And unfortunately, I think there's a segment of our hospitality brothers and sisters who have forgotten that in hospitality, we are in service to others. But more importantly, we are in service to one another. And sometimes one goes by the other side. And you know, I don't know how to balance the scale 100% of the time. But I think to your point, you just keep doing those little things.
As long as you understood, there's no destination. And you don't arrive, there's no finish line. The finish line is almost like you can make a finish line daily. You can make a finish line weekly, monthly, yearly, whatever the finish line is for you. It's just a finish line until the next finish line. You just arrive into a point when it becomes second nature. It's like you just kind of live and breathe that philosophy and you realize that you don't even think about it anymore. That's just the way you behave and conduct yourself.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is not only finish line, but there's also no race. It's just the journey, staying present to every single moment along that. And knowing myself as being somebody who's very passionate, but can sometimes put too much on his plate, that having that central focus and continuing to come back to that one North Star of like, how can I be in service to my community can be a powerful thing. Because no matter what happens in my life, I can always look at, is that in alignment with that or not? Nope. All right. I got to figure something else out. You're coaching people on Chef, right? I've seen your website and it's really a work of art, probably like much of your work was.
Thank you.
What do you hope that people take away from the book more than anything else?
I think this book is ready for anyone wondering what working in hospitality is, kind of having an access. You're kind of coming from the kitchen door. You're kind of entering that world from the back door and kind of getting a glimpse of what that is. The main part of this book is really for, it's you against you versus you with you. It's really huge internal and inner transformation. You can read the book and read the questions and decide to just continue the book. And by the end of the book, you can feel somewhat inspired or just say, yeah, it was a good book. Or you can actually use that book and using it as a blueprint. And when you get into that specific chapter or that specific moment, and I put a lot of introspective questions in there, then you actually take a moment to stop and pause reading the book and just asking yourself that question. And then you just kind of, if you really do that, you will have extracted 100% what this book is about. Because this book is a lot about the work you have to do within yourself in order to reach a level of fulfillment in your career.
Chef, what's the one question you ask yourself every day?
What's some questions?
What's the one question you ask yourself every day?
There's more than a few. First one is, what the hell am I going to do today? That's the first one. So I look at the calendar. But no, often is I am someone that takes time, sometimes too much time to process things. I do dig very deeply into moments, like if I had a long conversation with my wife, or if I had a long phone call with a friend, or I have a huge project ahead of me, I'm going to take a lot of time to process and digest this information. And sometimes for me, it takes days. It can take weeks for some of them. So the call to action for this for me was like, okay, this is what happened yesterday. As I need to, what do I want to extract today? Because I still someone that still need to feel like I'm moving forward. I don't necessarily sit on thing until I'm ready, because I know myself enough to know that I might just discard it after time because I've left it pondered. So I'm just trying to say, okay, I'm going to extract this little bit of this and implement. And I'm going to try to implement this. And like I said, sometimes I'm having conversation with friends or a big project. It's going to take me 10 call to action in order to really get to where I need to be. But that's just my journey. I need a lot of time to process things, right. But I want to make sure that those are the questions, but I'm constantly asking myself questions. My brain can't shut off. I'm a huge movie fanatic, so it takes me to go to the movie theater in order for me to unwind, because I could work until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, which I do too often. Mm-hmm. And now I'm dismissing the self-care. And so all of those things is constant search of your balance. And I almost like to use the word harmony more than balance, because I don't think there's a perfect balance, but I think there's going to be days when your priorities will take over the other priorities. So sure. I would like an harmonious balance, if I were to use a word.
And we all know what's coming, right? We saw the P&L. We saw last year. And so we can clock it and June. We got to start planning for that in February, right? Mm-hmm. And my experience has been that with the team, you know, we get that stuff done. And yet there might be somebody who I forgot to tell.
Sure.
Did I actually tell my partner that we're like, of course, come on. She's been with me for a while. She knows how the game is played. And I found out, no. My wife said to me, it sounds like you guys are going to war. I'm like, we are. But that hasn't been her experience. For us, it's like second nature. Like when we gear up and we get ready for a battle, we want it. We're ready to be tested because we got a skill set. Now we need to be sharpening our blades. But the point being is that untested is unverified. So,
and there's also a part of you that thinks you're the only one who can make it happen.
Well, I certainly believe that for a while, for sure, man. Absolutely. Because I had evidence. There were days where everything was going sideways and I would do something, it would all somehow right. But that was an everyday, right? And as I got older, there were fewer and fewer of those circumstances where I could actually say that I had anything to do with it. What I had to do was empowering the people around me to handle it.
Yep. Right?
And I think for a long time, it was a little hard for me to take that as the same thing as settling into it and going like, no, man, my eldership, my mentorship, not only served in this particular moment, but served. I had a moment with a coaching client the other day and a young guy, and he is at this moment in his career. Chef, I'm telling you, fucking taste it. I remember when I was right there. I was right there in that moment. I said to him, you do know what your owners are waiting for, right? He's like, what are you talking about? I said, they're waiting for you to step up. This is the moment, man. Step up. Like, you have it in your hands. You got all the tools you need, but you need to step up. And I must have gone on for about 15 or 18 minutes. Clearly not coaching, right? More like cheerleading. But it was like, I wanted to celebrate that fucking moment because I know what, like, as shitty as it feels in this moment, I know how glorious it can feel on the other side of it. And I know for myself, there have been plenty of times when I got right up to the line, but never any further.
Yeah.
Right. And I was always really curious about what was on the other side. But I don't know if it was doubt or maybe courage. I don't know what it was, but
there's always a fear of the uncharted territory, sure. A fear of the unknown. And I think there's part of us that is always conditioned to be afraid of the failure. You kind of almost want a guarantee of success before you make that leap. I think you want to be sometimes, you say, you know what? What could happen if I made a mistake here?
Everything fine. What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, minimizing the actual outcome and kind of something I understood much later in my career, learning to trust your training and trust what brought you here in the first place, to know that you're the right person to make that first step. It's hard because for me, I was always second guessing what I knew, always questioning if I was ready for it. Right. For the cities to never come.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah. All those things is all the inner battles that you have to go through. You know, I'm going to do it. And sometimes you just need that one person in your corner that believe in you more than you believe in yourself in order to do that.
Or none of us would be here right now.
Yes. And
one person.
A lot of decision and a lot of move and a lot of steps that I've taken over the years since I became entrepreneur, 2.5 years full time. There was a lot of, if I'm doing this and what if I'm, because you're kind of facing the consequences that you don't have a safety net. It's just the entrepreneur, one in charge.
And financially responsible.
Yes. I have to say aspect of it, knowing me the way she knows me has helped me, giving me perspective into moving in some direction, or she believed in me more than I believe in myself. For example, my book, I was looking to get published or hybrid published. And so my wife is the one that opened my eyes into the network that I already had. And maybe I should count on my own network in order to do this. Kind of me navigating the in order to take the sound decision. But if it was up to me, I probably would have spent X amount of money and spend the money on something that I shouldn't have. So listening to the perspective, and in hindsight, you realize that perspective could have been handled differently. Sometimes you're resistant to those perspectives, but like I said, we can only be grateful of those.
Our conversations together have really served me, Chef. So I want to say thank you, because I was able to recognize that regardless of what I think right now, in every single circumstance, I did the best I could with the tools I had and the knowledge that was available to me at that time. And I spent a lot of my time with, you know, shame and regret, which is a great way of not getting on doing the fucking thing that you're supposed to be doing, right? And in our conversations together, it kind of landed with me like, no, man, I could have some grace and compassion for myself, you know, because if I don't, then there's a part of me that's unavailable for other people. And the one thing I know now more than anything else is that I didn't get here by myself, and we need community more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it craft and a fraternity, I call it fraternity all the time because, you know, we're brothers and sisters in arms and linked moving forward. But some of us are like looking over here when we should be looking over here, like we walking together forward. And I just celebrate you showing up in this space very courageously and saying, I have something to share. And you might want to listen because, you know, served me well.
Yes, it did.
And where can people find you, Chef?
So they can find me on my website, cheffranc.com. That would be the best way. And they can kind of access my universe and at the same time reaching out to a window to my company, Incrementum. Mm-hmm. And then otherwise on social media, you can find me on LinkedIn and Instagram will be the two main platform that I'm active on. If people want to order the book, October 14, the book will be officially released. But right now you can pre-order it on my website only. I'll be sending it from my house. So you can pick the notes and I can definitely sign it for you and making sure you got something to pass on to someone, give to someone, or just for yourself. You can pre-order it directly. It's readily available and you'll have it on your hands in second week of October.
And we'll make sure that all those links are in the show notes. Will you come back, Chef? Because I'd really love it. Again,
I think we have so much more to talk about, Wyden.
I know. And it's one thing to be validated and reflected back on. That feels really, really good. I know that we've had as different an experience as you can possibly imagine coming up in this industry. And yet we both come to the same basic conclusion mm-hmm. that, you know, I got to a point in my career when no matter where I was, I would say, can we do it better? Yes or no? And very often, I think we can do it better. All right, let's make it better. What's that? That sounds like a worthy thing for me. And so I look around and say, can I do better? Can we do better? I think that there's a lot of room for improvement, especially when it comes to supporting one another. Because I think sometimes in our youth and innocence, we talk a lot of shit about other people. And we hold a lot of heart.
We're very good at that.
And the competition can be good. And then there's this other side of you when you're so triggered by somebody because they remind you of you. And it feels like, I feel very much like you. I am so fucking down for this industry and that has given me so much and has provided me opportunities like this today. Still in the game, mm-hmm. still doing it. We still have something to give.
Absolutely.
Chef Franc, thank you so much for being here. And I look forward to seeing you soon.
Same here, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Au revoir. Oui, chef.
There you go.
That's a wrap for today's episode of Chef Life Radio. If this resonated with you, do me a favor. Subscribe, share, and leave a review. Your feedback helps us reach more culinary leaders like you who are ready to take their kitchens to the next level. Want more? Connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, or join our Chef Life Radio community for exclusive insights and leadership tools. Remember, leadership isn't about perfection, it's about progress. So take what you've learned today and apply it in your kitchen, your team, and your life. Chef Life Radio is more than just a podcast, it's a movement. The focus is no longer just on career survival, but on transforming leadership, creating sustainability, and ensuring chefs can build kitchens that thrive. Remember, the secret ingredient to culinary success isn't just in the food, it's in the leadership. Keep learning, keep growing, and as always, lead with the heart. See you next time.